It's Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett and White Rabbit, the lesson of White Rabbit and the pills that mother give you don't do anything at all. Well, maybe that's not true. Maybe the pills that we are being given are actually intended to keep us sick, not make us better. We'll talk about side effects, death next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. Well, it is with great interest that we bring up Dr. John Verapen on Coast to Coast AM. It seems like lately, especially, some of my experiences with the pharmaceutical industry seem to back up his testimony. The book is Side Effects Death, and a lot of people know Dr. John Verapen for his many appearances on YouTube, a couple of his lectures that have been broken up in segments that you can catch here or there. Worth going to. Go to his website, too. Good evening, Dr. John Verapen. How are you?
Good morning. Good evening to you. It's morning here.
Where am I catching you in Europe this morning?
In Germany, yes.
You're in Germany. Are you enjoying the World Cup?
Oh, yes. Well, I'm sorry to see you guys go last night, but...
Yeah, that was very exciting.
Yeah,
I thought they did too. USA, USA. Side effects, death, confessions of a pharma insider. Talk about how, just to establish how you became a pharmaceutical executive. You started in sales. How did you end up getting into the pharmaceutical industry?
Well, I was living in the UK before, and then I was doing pre-medical studies in Ireland. And one day I just got fed up with my surroundings because it was a racial issue, foremost. And I sold my books, bought a guitar, and vagabonded around the world, down to the borders of India, Pakistan, and these places. And then I came back, moved through Europe, and ended up in Sweden because I had met a woman there before I took off on my travels. And I went to Sweden to see her, and I got stuck. I stayed, married her, and stayed in Sweden.
There's always a woman, isn't there?
It's always a woman, yeah. The long hair is the government.
Yeah. That could be your other book. There's always a woman, a side effects death. And then, but I think this is, you kind of touched on it, but I think this is, at least as I understand it, so much a part of your story. You said that you were experiencing some racial discrimination on the basis that, on the color of your skin, you were,
yes.
Right. So explain that a little bit in context so people can understand that now.
Well, I was born in, Guyana on the South American coast. And was sent away to the UK because we were a British colony. And now it's independent. They're called Guyana. It used to be called British Guyana. But when I came to the UK, I could not understand why the color of my skin made me inferior to the other people around them. In those days, I mean, it was humongous, you know, the racial discrimination, and I just got fed up. I wanted to see if the world was really like that, and I just took off and went around the world,
but
singing.
And coming back to Europe, coming to Sweden, as I think I understand your story well enough. That the fact that you got a job as an executive or as a sales associate for a pharmaceutical company or a medical company, that was great because it was sort of a breakthrough. Even though you were a person of color, you suddenly had a good job.
Yeah. Well, when I came there and. It took some time, but I wanted to go back and finish my studies. But I had a family then, and I got this offer to be a salesman for a pharmaceutical company. Now, Sweden was where I felt peace. It was a wonderful place. I was welcomed like you cannot imagine. The people were nice. There was no racial feeling then when I got to Sweden. And that's where I stayed. Eventually, I got a job as a salesman with one company, and I took this on as a career. And I worked for several companies here and there, primarily because I needed to learn different facets or find out about different facets of the pharma industry. So I worked for several companies until Eli Lilly and Company recruited me, the headhunter, in 1979. And I was then the Scandinavian product manager for pain products. And things went higher and higher, and I eventually became the executive director of the company in Sweden. The affiliate in Sweden in 1982.
So fairly meteoric rise, pretty close to the top. That definitely puts you in the, you know, within the Arctic Circle, so to speak, of being at the top of the world for Eli Lilly. Fair enough for you to say that you were at that level. You're exposed to the company's corporate strategies, to its, you know, inside memos. You knew what was, you were beginning to learn what was going on at that company.
Yes. That was the, I was at the top. I couldn't go any further in Europe. Well, not Europe, but in Sweden. And, yeah, it's, the pressure was building when you get to that kind of position.
So what were some of the first things as head of that end of the company in Sweden for Eli Lilly? What were some of the first things that you were exposed to that made you think, this is interesting, or that's not what I thought we were doing? Do you remember?
Yeah, well, that I was on a high. I mean, I was very successful. The company was having problems at the time. I turned it around. Very, very successful, exceptionally successful, I might add. And I didn't reflect on what was really going on because, I mean, I was young, I was a well-paid executive, I had a car, I had all the perks, expense accounts, went around the world, slept in five-star hotels, and not to mention, you know, the wine, women, and song that goes with it.
And so, really nice wine, as if I understand the story correctly. You had, I'm sure the women were nice, and I'm sure the songs were great, but I hear the wine in particular was particularly good for you.
Oh, yeah, very, very, very much so.
You had a golden key to some secret wine cellar or something?
A very special place in Stockholm. It's a cellar at the bottom of one of the most famous restaurants in the world called the Opera Cellar. That's in the just next to the Opera House in Stockholm. And, you know, we as executives would be offered a golden key to go in there and bring your guests down in this little cellar for wine tasting, you know, with sawdust on the floor and the cheese on top of wooden barrels. And it was pretty exciting, you know, and you have to be at a certain level where you had clients that you could take there for the fancy dinner because it was expensive.
Right.
And I had one of those. And, you know, that's where my gourmet education started. You know?
I bet it did. Dr. John Verapin is the author of Side Effects, Death, Confessions of a Pharma Insider. We're talking first about the insider part, and then we'll get to the other part in a second. The other shoe will drop. But you were literally rubbing elbows with royalty in your position at the head of the company in Sweden.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, this restaurant that I went to, for example, the princess, one of the princesses, was sitting at a table next to me. It's just like any normal person. So, I mean, I didn't rub elbow exactly, literally, with her, but...
But pretty close. And any normal person that had a golden key, I mean, that's just very cool. To have a golden key
When you get a golden key, you're not normal.
No. I mean, that's like Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. I mean, you're very special, but... So you had a good life. You had, in fact, you could make an argument that you had every reason to keep looking the other way as you began to learn more about what you say the pharmaceutical industry was really doing.
Yes, when I started to see things, I would just sort of put it in my memory bank and not reflect too much on it, because I didn't know anything else at that time in my life. And I wasn't ready to give up the jet set life for anything else. And I continued. And from there, I was promoted to Puerto Rico and had responsibilities there for the Caribbean, Puerto Rico, the Caribbean, and a couple of Central American companies. Countries, and after I arrived there in 1988, on the 10th of August, Eli Lilly and Company fired me, which was the most devastating moment in my life. And I found out later why they did, because some of the things I did in Sweden, I mean, there were really horrendous things. And
like, what do you mean when you say that things you did in Sweden were horrendous? So it sort of sounds like you deserved to be fired.
No. I did it on behalf of the company. You don't do things on your own when you work for a company like Eli Lilly. Yeah, they have strict control.
Right. So what did you do?
I performed corruption, big time. I bribed the Swedish government, which is something that is unknown of. You don't bribe the Swedish government in those days. I mean, it's one of the most reputable countries in the world,
right?
Cleanest and everything that goes with it. But hey, this little boy from Guyana did it.
Well, what would be the purpose? Why would Eli Lilly want you to, and what was the upside for you to be bribing officials, government officials in Sweden?
Well, at that time, you know the drug. Have you ever heard of Prozac?
Sure.
Okay, Prozac is the first ever blockbuster in the world of pharmaceutical industry. And that product was sent to me to be registered in Sweden. Now, Sweden is a prestige country. When you do anything in medicine, especially in psychiatry, people look up to the Swedes because they were so good.
And rigorous standards, good standards.
Yes. And you had a lot of researchers there, and the way Sweden is known to handle psychiatry, for example, was unique. Anyway, this product was thrown in my lap, and I was told we need to register this as soon as possible, or they would be in trouble because they had just lost another product, which was supposedly the one that was going to be the number one blockbuster. It never came because they had to withdraw the product from the market
What was that one? Do you remember what that drug was?
Yeah, it's called enoxaprofen, or Oprin. Oraflex is the name, I think, for the U.S.
What was it supposed to do before they withdrew it?
Pain.
Okay.
It's a pain product for arthritis, arthrosis, and these people. And it came out and was a huge success in England. I was waiting for the registration of that. It was a huge success. And the product was suddenly, a month or so later, taken off the market because it had killed a lot of people. And, then this other product was in the pipeline. This was fluoxetine, you know, Prozac. They hurriedly wanted to get this registered. And in Sweden at that time, it took anywhere from 1 to 8, 9 years to get the approval. They couldn't wait. I was told by the big guy who later became the chairman of the board of Eli Lilly and Company that my job could be on the line if we don't get this product registered. That was the first time I got kind of angry inside of me and sort of thought, well, wait a minute. Is this guy threatening me, giving me this kind of pressure, or what? So I became much, much, much more aware of my surroundings and what they were doing, and opened up my memory bank and put stuff in there.
And started thinking what's going on. So, but then you put the pressure on officials in Sweden to expedite the approval of Prozac.
Well, the process is such that in psychiatry, for example, and all other in areas of indications, the Swedish government or the approval board, they give the file to an independent consultant, a psychiatrist in this case, and they're usually secret. Nobody knows about it. Nobody can... you know, they're not supposed to know who these people are. But I found out that it could have only been 1 in 5, you know, and I did the math correctly and then my little research and I found out who this person was. And then I befriended him and yeah.
Yeah. How much money?
Pardon?
How much money are we talking about to bribe officials to
Well,
to...
in this case, it was somewhere in the region of $30,000, because all he had to do was push the file through and approve it. And funny enough, this guy didn't like the product, you know, in the first place. He said, this thing is rubbish. But the money wasn't.
Right.
And the arrangements were that there was going to be a lot of money paid to him later because he was in the whole package of this corruption effort. He was promised a long-term study at his clinic, which entailed a lot of money.
Sure.
And that never happened because...
Because of what happened?
Well, after I left, they promoted me after the product was refused by the board.
I want you to hang on to that thought, and we'll start there again in just a minute. We're talking with Dr. John Viripen, author of Side Effects Death. So he did, in fact, he says, bribe Swedish officials. That led his eventually to him being fired from Eli Lilly. Now he tells the rest of the story coming up next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. It's Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett coming up. This conversation is just getting started with Dr. John Viripen. So he was explaining how he would see little bits, little memos here or there, little things that he would take note of as a pharmaceutical executive, but life was too good. But just after Eli Lilly, he said, moved him to Puerto Rico, they sacked him. And he found out it was because he had been a good company man and moved along the approval of Prozac in Sweden with a $30,000 bribe to a Swedish official. You know, the history of Eli Lilly says they've cut some corners. They've paid out, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars in fines over the years for these antidepressant products. So no big surprise in a way if what John Verapin says is true. It's pretty consistent with what the company has done in the past. But it's what is on, you know, the table tonight that you need to be paying particular attention to. The book is Side Effects Death. And we'll talk about just how the pharmaceutical industry is trying to keep you sick, not trying to make you well. Coming up next on Coast to Coast, this is Ian Punnett. So Dr. John Verapin was talking about the book Side Effects Death and talking about how he had bribed Swedish officials to get approval for Prozac and then had gone to Puerto Rico for a promotion to take over for Eli Lilly for the Caribbean when he got fired. And it was so there must have been some sort of investigation going on in Sweden or something where they felt like they needed to get rid of you. It couldn't be because they had to get rid of you because you were such a good company man that you got it approved. They couldn't have gotten rid of you because of that, because that's what they wanted from you, wasn't it?
Yes, but Ian, before I get into that, can I just say hello to all my Facebook friends that are listening to the program right now?
Sure, you can.
And
hello, Facebook friends.
I wouldn't mind those guys sending me one of those cigarette things to try out also. Anyway, the whole, let me put it in a nutshell.
Okay.
The reason I was taken to Puerto Rico is because if they had fired me in Sweden, it would have cost them an arm and a leg. You don't fire people in Sweden.
Huh.
Now, it took about a month for them to find some story, and they said that I was talking bad about the company. And I have no memory of this whatsoever. So it was a setup. Anyway, this I found out later after I spent everything I had in the courts with them. And funny enough, I won the case. I sued them for about $6 million.
All right.
I won the case in the district court. It's there in the records. Anybody can go to the court and check the records. It's written in the records that I had proven my case. 3 weeks later, when the judge came out with the final decision, he reversed it. And
Basis of what? I mean, why did he reverse it?
No idea. He didn't say. But I know why. I know why. I mean, Eli Lilly and the justice system of America, they sleep in the same bed.
Well, and you know, just to make the point, because I just said it so it'll seem inconsistent, Eli Lilly has paid out, you know, hundreds of millions, if not $1 billion in fines over the years. So if they were in bed at one time, maybe the justice system kicked them out of bed at some point.
No.
No?
No, 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 no. They're still there. I'll get back to that.
It's
bigger than people can imagine. This whole thing, the whole industry. But in this particular case, I sued them on grounds of racial discrimination, not the corruption issue. Because if I had spoken about this at that time, I was liable to go to jail. So I had the statute of limitations on my head, which is about 10 years.
Okay. So, but I don't want to get too far away from the central theme of that was that they fired you. You didn't know. You found out that, you know, they make claims that take a while to come up with a concocted excuse. But the bottom line was you knew too much and you had said you had gotten approval for something they were trying to cut you off from. Why wouldn't they want to keep you as a good soldier, somebody who had successfully bribed Swedish officials to get approval for a drug that they wanted you to hurry along.
Well, they didn't get the approval, you see.
Okay.
This is the problem. They did not get the approval. They would have gotten it, but they're too greedy. The board of, that was going to give the final approval had sent me a message and said, go and do the price negotiations for this product in Sweden.
For the bribe?
No. This has to do with the registry, the marketing approval.
Oh, okay. All right.
So I negotiated a price with the government, which was a very high price, $1.20 per tablet of 20 milligrams. Now, that was an official approval. So they can use that price then to get approval anywhere around the world, saying Sweden gave us this price. So that's the price they would get or more in other countries. Anyway, the Swedes said, we will approve the product only when and if you submit a 5 milligram dose of this drug. Because one very famous world-renowned psychiatrist, that's probably the only one I like anyway, has said that at 5 milligrams, there will be less side effects.
For Prozac?
Yes.
Okay.
Plus, that there are lots of other things that I knew about with this product at the time, that they knew also that the deadly side effects were there. And they suppressed all this information.
All the deadly side effects.
Yes. Anyway, the Swedes said, bring a 5 milligram dose. They said no. I had all sorts of people running in my office from Indianapolis, from England, all the medical people and what. And I'm not, they don't let you get involved in medical issues and so forth. I'm my position at that time. Anyway, they said they will not do the 5 milligram. And the Swedes said, well, you don't get your registration. Then they put me on a plane to Puerto Rico as director for that area.
Okay, and then fired you.
I'm fired.
Okay, so what? Tell me. Let's cut to the chase on the Prozac then for people since we've gone here. When you say the deadly side effects, what did you know early on about Prozac that the rest of the world didn't catch on for some time?
Well, that it has deadly side effects. One of them, which is quite prevalent today, because the drug is still being sold for millions and millions of dollars, was suicide. A lot of people kill themselves.
Did you know that at the time?
Oh, yeah.
How did you know that? What was it that you knew?
Well, it was written in some places on the, if you look at the file and the clinical evaluation they had, on some studies, I looked them up, and I found out that there were some studies that showed side effects that they did not include in the file. Then, like most countries, you need a local study to submit when you submit for the approval.
Right.
And we did one in Sweden, a local study, and not many patients. And the first 2 days of that study, two people try to kill themselves immediately. And have you ever seen an ant's nest with them ants running around when something's wrong?
Yeah.
That's what happened in my office with the executives and the medical people, the doctors and whoever they are. They came running around in my office and tried to fix this thing. So, yeah, it's corrupt. Man, it's,
okay.
And you said earlier that I'm claiming this. I am claiming this, and I've claimed this since the last 6 years when I started writing. And not only do I claim it, I can prove it.
Right. How do you prove that?
I got documents.
That say what?
I went in, you know, this was bugging me because I didn't leave the pharmaceutical industry. I didn't know anything else when they fired me. So I had a consulting company in Fort Lauderdale. And I had three other pharmaceutical companies under my umbrella, so to speak, with responsibilities of Caribbean, Latin America, Central America, Mexico, the whole western side of the world. And I thought, you know, I'm going to come clean now and do things with other companies, but they're just as bad. And I haven't started to talk yet about what I know.
Well, let's get down to cases then. I mean, we know that you knew stuff from the inside, but now even as an outsider, you...
No, I was inside at the time. And now as an outsider, I'm able to... the good news is now I'm retired, I'm sitting outside, I can smell everything they do. If one executive in the pharma industry right now, especially the big ones, if he goes out to take a toilet break, I will know.
Okay. Well, I think this is what I'm getting at. As an outsider now, you can tell these things. So tell us, what is it? Why do you say, for example, that Eli Lilly, and I saw this in one of your YouTube videos, is evil? You say they're just an evil company. What does that mean for you?
That was written on the internet. Somebody else said that, and I picked up on that.
Okay.
And if you go back into the history of this company, you will see that they have done so many bad things.
Well, they invented
drugs.
They were the first to make penicillin readily available, weren't they?
Yeah, I'm not too sure about that.
Okay.
I'm not too sure about that. The thing that they made readily available was insulin.
Okay.
They got the rights for the insulin from Banting and Best, the doctors that invented this thing. I'm not sure about penicillin.
Okay, well, that's fair enough.
There are lots of other drugs that came after that.
And what are some of the evil things that you say they've done? What would be typical of what you know about Eli Lilly?
Well, they make drugs today, and going back, 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago, for the sole purpose of making money. They don't care whatsoever about people's health. They don't care about patients. Despite what they write on their website, their high integrity, their concern for human health. And if you read that website, somewhere in the middle there, you'll find that the most concern they have is for their shareholders. And this is not only Lilly, it's the whole pharmaceutical industrial complex, which has grown today since I started in 1968 and since I've left the business altogether in retirement. They have grown to become what I personally call the world order. They are the cartel. The cartel that was built, I saw memos about this years ago. And I thought it would have been a good thing, but I didn't know it was a mafia-like situation. They control everything.
Okay. What do you mean by that? How do they control it? How does one company from Indianapolis control everything?
Well, Indianapolis, yeah, but they grew and grew and grew. And when they had all their friends come together, the other big ones like Pfizer, Merck, Beecham, GlaxoSmithKline, Beecham from the UK and whatever. They have the justice system connections. They have that the political scene. The whole political scene. I mean, all your politicians over there in America and also in other countries, because this thing has spread like a disease all over the world. But it all starts in the U.S. I'm sorry
If it's happening, it's happening. But what is it that they – I want to get to the point about what it is that they really do. So you say all of these pharmaceutical industries, they – all of these giants, they'll come up with a product And you say that these products are not designed to really heal people, that, you know, that these are designed to what? To keep them alive but sick?
Yeah,
so they have to keep buying it?
If you cure the diseases, you don't have patients. Nobody will need pharmaceutical drugs. Like AIDS, for example, why do you think they haven't cured AIDS? You get rid of all the AIDS patients, where are you going to get your money from? And that, I'm talking billions and billions of dollars just for that indication. The same thing with cancer. Let me ask you a question, Ian, as a,
sure.
a normal guy. I mean, you talk to a lot of people and so forth.
Sure.
Can you remember or do you know of any medicine that has cured anything in the last 50 years? I give you $100 if you tattoo you.
All right, let me see if I can think of one, because you say cured anything, meaning that it absolutely eliminated it from the face of the earth, so that what about something like in the last 50 years, you said, and so I can't go back any further than that. I can't think of any.
There isn't any. And if there were, like some antibiotics that would cure an infection or whatever, those are natural things, not the chemical antibiotics, the natural stuff, like penicillin, for example, and some other antibiotics. But curing any ailment on this planet does not exist.
All right. Well,
pharmaceutical industry.
Let me throw an eye on you. What about this is? I know this is not a disease per se, but erectile dysfunction. That seems to be the big money maker for all of these pharmaceutical companies, right?
Yeah. Well, that's, there you go. I mean, people are dying of many other diseases, chronic diseases. I mean, Parkinson's. What do you call the other one? With dementia, cancer,
Alzheimer's,
diabetes, Alzheimer's disease. All these things are out there, and they claim to be doing research, and they're going to do something and bring a product that is going to make everybody healthy. Where is it?
Yeah, in the meantime, they come up with a very profitable drug for erectile dysfunction, but. Isn't that an indicator that it's a lot, if you'll pardon the analogy here, it's a lot easier to fix a flat tire than it is, you know, to fix a piston in an engine. And so you go to the flat tire fix because that's easier and you can make more money right away.
Exactly. This is what they're doing. Now they only last week, the media is now promoting, I call it seeding, the mainstream media, just as crooked as the pharmaceutical industry, they sleep also in the same bed. They came out with something for women.
Well, they tried to.
No, now they have something. Now it's under clinical evaluation.
Oh, yeah, I thought actually the most recent news as of like Thursday was that it didn't get approval because it didn't work. You're talking about the female Viagra, they were calling it?
Yes,
it didn't get approval. The tests, at least the last thing I saw, and you're welcome to comment on this coming up, is the test I saw said there was no difference. Women reported no improvement with the female Viagra, so it will not be on the market. Other, you know, vitamins and stuff are, but not a pill form. But, well, then, why don't we ask about that? What do you think will happen then once it has not been given approval? What will the pharmaceutical industry do about that? And in other, what other ways are the pharmaceutical industry keeping you sick but alive? Dr. John Verapin coming up next, Side Effects Death on Coast to Coast.